Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
There's no big energy coming out of the Democratic Party.
Shock, disgust, happiness, sweat, a little bit of lust, baby.
It's go time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see it when I see it, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Good afternoon. Welcome to a Tuesday afternoon edition as we get rolling here with a little sunshine in St. Louis. Not too bad. It doesn't feel very warm, but I'll take the sunshine. There's no doubt about it. Ethan's here in the studio. Fred, the Hall of Famer. Sue's running a little late. She, some excuse about something in her alley. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll vet that story when she gets in here this afternoon. But we got a lot to get to. And, you know, I guess maybe let me just start here quickly with the fire situation in L.A. is not bad right now. The winds certainly have been kicking up. You got to give a lot of credit to these fire crews and what they've been doing, because there were a couple that popped up in the last 18 hours that they've been able to, you know, certainly manage and control. One of the coolest things that we've learned here in the past couple of days, I just tweeted this out, is the pink fire retardant that you see in many of the videos that they're, you know, blasting to protect homes and keep the brush from becoming on fire. It's made by a St. Louis company called Perimeter Solutions here. And we have a friend of the show, Paul Ross, is coming up here. He is a veteran, not only a fire specialist, but like an aviation specialist. Right. Has fought fires before, wildfires out west, has some really great perspectives here. He's coming up. I didn't know until Paul told us that company
made. Yeah, I didn't either.
You know, and there's
been pretty cool.
Several national stories about that, like the New York Post and Newsweek and other publications have done stories. Hey, what's the pink fire retardant? They've mentioned the company, but I didn't see any reference to St. Louis, so I'm glad that Paul raised that point. But the fire situation somewhat, I guess we say, status quo at this point, but they are certainly not out of the woods, and a lot of the blame game questions continue. I was listening to we have John Ziegler coming up in just a couple hours from Los Angeles. John is the host of the Death of Journalism podcast. I listened to the most recent edition because he got into some of the stuff and the way the media is handling this. We played one of the bites last week where, you know, there was an anchor that tried to protect Karen Bass and Gavin Newsom by saying, we have not had any confirmation that the fire hydrants don't have any water. And then literally seconds after the anchor says that, the reporter that he goes to comes on and says, yeah, we have confirmation that there was no water in the fire hydrants. It's just, it's stunning. So, you know, I think, Fred, one of the things I would say is, this is proof. The last 2 days, 3 days, maybe just today, now we're not out of the woods yet, it's proof that they could have done more to protect these homes and businesses. Not to say that this wasn't a unique fire event with 100-mile-per-hour winds, but there was no preparation whatsoever. I mean, you know, I said something on Tuesday morning when I saw the story in the LA Times. I didn't hear anybody, and John's going to tell you, Zig's going to tell you, there was no media, you know, build up to what happened last Tuesday, warning people about the winds. Karen Bass was in Ghana. She wasn't going around and saying, hey, we need to be careful. So we'll get into all that with John in the next hour. The big story today is the Pete Hegseth confirmation hearings. And there's a bunch of different moments. And these things are rather predictable from the standpoint that it's all, you know, if it's a Republican-led committee like this and you have confirmation hearings for a Republican, all the Democrats have to play the same game and, you know, play gotcha. And the Republicans, I thought the Republicans did a pretty good job at highlighting some of the differences in policy. That's for sure this morning. Fred, it's my understanding, is that one over?
Yeah, it's done with a vote coming next week.
Right. And, you know, it's going to pass. He will certainly clear this. But listen, this was kind of interesting. There's a lot of stuff this morning. There were fireworks that I know Fox covered it nonstop. Did CNN cover it, Fred?
Mm-hmm.
Almost
yeah,
nonstop?
Yeah, they did.
So this is... let me start with a couple of my favorite bites. Who's the guy, Sheehy, right, that was going back and forth?
Yeah, Tim Sheehy.
Okay, so this is, where the hell is this? I just literally had this particular samba. Here it is. He kind of did this rapid-fire set of questions.
How many genders are there? Tough one.
Senator, there are two genders.
I know that well. I'm a Sheehy, so I'm on board.
Oh, a little humor. Look at that. Levity.
What is the diameter of the rifle round fired out of an M4 A1 rifle?
That's a 5.56.
How many push-ups can you do?
I did 5 sets of 47 this morning.
What do you think our most important strategic base is in the Pacific?
That's not important. Let's go back to the push-ups real quick. Like, that's a big deal. 5 sets of 47. I rattled those off before I even left the door this morning, too. Like, thank you, Fred. I haven't either.
But why 47?
Well, here's my theory. You know, that's a very good question. But here's what I'm thinking.
I know why.
Because then tomorrow he's going to do 5 sets of 48, right? And then he's going to ramp it up to 50. I don't know. I'm guessing.
My theory is...
Oh, it's Trump.
Trump.
That's why.
Oh.
No, that's a better theory.
That's funny.
That is exactly what it is. Did you come up on that on your own?
Just
did you hear
now.
Someone? You didn't cheat?
Nope.
I think that's
no,
it, though,
he's
Fred.
Not you,
I think
Mark.
It's gotta
he
be.
Came up with it honestly on his own.
Thank you.
And hello, Sue.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I heard we had an alley incident.
Well, you know, it's just an ice rink in the city.
Oh, yeah.
Sue was doing her due diligence, you know, checking the traffics on the road herself.
Well,
hands
on. Yeah. Thank you for that, Ethan. But what really happened was sometimes when you're borderline late, you can make it. When there's ice, you can't. And as soon as I pulled out to the T in the alley, I usually go left. It's quicker. And there was somebody grinding rear wheel drive car, and it couldn't move. And I did the should I? And they were like, nope, go the other way. So I had to back up and go the other way. Mm. And then the lights are out of sync. It was a comedy of errors.
These
but
things
mostly
happen.
It's my fault.
Well, we welcome you to the program this afternoon. We're talking about Pete Hegseth. He is the defense secretary nominee, and there were fireworks on Capitol Hill in this hearing. I think Pete did very well, but look, they tried to Kavanaugh him. There's no doubt about it. They bring up disgusting things. There were two folks that really stood out. Tim Kaine is just, you know, he was a vice presidential candidate. Here's his problem. You know, that guy went to Mizzou and then he went to KU. If that's not a fatal character flaw right there, if you go to KU, I don't know what is. But he was disgusting this morning. Here's some of the questioning.
Return to the incident that you referenced a minute ago that occurred in Monterey, California in October 2017. At that time, you were still married to your second wife, correct?
I believe so.
And you had just fathered a child by a woman who would later become your third wife, correct?
Senator, I was falsely charged, investigated, and completely cleared.
So you think you were completely cleared because you committed no crime? That's your definition of cleared? You had just fathered a child 2 months before by a woman that was not your wife. I am shocked that you would stand here and say you're completely cleared. Can you so casually cheat on a second wife and cheat on the mother of a child that had been born 2 months before, and you tell us you are completely cleared?
Senator,
how is that a complete clear?
Senator, her child's name is Gwendolyn Hope Hegseth, and she's a child of God, and she's 7 years old.
You remember, of course, when Tim Kaine was on Capitol Hill, and he was so upset about Hunter Biden, right? He had that same consistency when it came to Hunter Biden as well. It's just ridiculous. Now, there's things that come up when you are a nominee for a position like this. I covered that story because in the immediate aftermath of the nomination, the LA Times did a story about all this, and this goes back to something that happened in California in 2017. Now, there was an NDA that was signed the lawyer and Pete Hegseth say that, you know, these allegations weren't true. You might remember that his mother, and I think his mother was referenced here during some of these hearings, his mom had written him an email. She now says that it, you know, was in the heat of the moment. But he, you know, Tim Kaine and some of these others didn't give up on some of this stuff.
Now, if it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
It was a false claim then and a false claim now.
If it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
That was a false claim.
So you're
talking about a hypothetical.
So you can't tell me whether someone who has committed a sexual assault is disqualified from being Secretary of Defense?
Senator, I know in my instance, and I'm talking about my instance only, it was a false claim.
But yeah, so he keeps trying to pin him down on that. I think Kane's trying to make it seem like it's a broader question, but it's not, because he wants to get the answer that they can replay time and time again on CNN. Another question.
I assume that in each of your weddings, you've pledged to be faithful to your wife. You've taken an oath to do that, haven't you?
Senator, as I've acknowledged to everyone in this committee, not a perfect person, not claiming to
be. But no, I just asked a simple question. You've taken an oath, like you would take an oath to be Secretary of Defense in all of your weddings, to be faithful to your wife. Is that correct?
I have failed in things in my life, and thankfully I'm redeemed by my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
In finalizing divorces from your first and second wives, were there non-disclosure agreements in connection with those divorces?
Senator, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so this goes on, and he was definitely assigned the role of the bulldog. And, you know, I just don't think that there's things... A lot of things that happened. If we want to go through the politicians, let's. This is good. I'll get a segue into Maisie Arano, who, and Fred, you know, I texted you. I was driving around this morning,
right,
and I was listening to some of this. When I'm listening to it, I'm a little disadvantaged because I don't always know who is doing the speaking. And I texted Fred and said, I think this is Maisie Arano, who is a senator from Hawaii, is one of the most revolting, disgusting people in all of Congress. And she kind of proved herself here today with some of these questions.
Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
No, Senator.
Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement relating to this kind of conduct?
Senator, I was falsely accused in October of 2017.
Yeah, he keeps having to go back to that because that's the incident that they're referring to.
I have read multiple reports of your regularly being drunk at work, including by people who worked with you at Fox News.
So this is one of the most unfair lines of questioning, because there was anonymous sourcing about Pete, and this was the hit job that happened in the immediate aftermath of this. Look, they went after Matt Gaetz, and Matt Gaetz fell because Matt Gaetz should have fallen. He should have never been a nominee. So, you know, he gets roughed up. He finally gets out. They tried to do the same thing with Hegseth. I remember seeing some of these stories, and you might remember Sue and Fred. I did not think that this nomination was going to survive. I really didn't. But he hung in there. He worked the halls of Capitol Hill, and he is likely to get confirmed. But they're not going to, you know, stop trying to bruise his reputation.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And go back to all these things that have happened in the past.
Do you know that being drunk at work is prohibited for service members under the UCMJ?
Senator, those
yes
are
or no?
Multiple false anonymous reports peddled by NBC
Do
News
you know that,
that run directly contradictory to the dozens of men and women at Fox News Channel. Who I work with
I'm not
came
hearing
on
the
record
to my question.
And said
in your
yeah, they're talking over one another. But this was the Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, and he had a good response here.
Senator from Virginia starts bringing up the fact that what if you showed up drunk to your job? How many senators have showed up drunk to vote at night?
Yeah.
Have any of you guys asked them to step down and resign from their job? And don't tell me you haven't seen it, because I know you have. And then how many senators do you know have got a divorce before cheating on their wives? Did you ask them to step down? No. We've all made mistakes. I've made mistakes. And Jennifer, thank you for loving him through that mistake. Because the only reason why I'm here and not in prison is because my wife loved me too.
I don't know all the background of Mark Wayne Mullen or what might have happened in his situation, but how I don't understand how some of this is really fair game, especially the drinking stuff. I think that the sexual assault line of questioning has a place because it was covered in the news. There was an NDA, and there are legitimate questions, especially with mom's email. But these questions have been answered. But on the drinking, there's no substantive report. And by the way, you know, I would take that seriously as someone who has had addiction issues, have had people close to me with addiction issues. My first response when I heard that about Pete Hegseth is, gosh, I hope that's not true, because it sounds like someone that has, you know, a bit of an issue. But there was no sourcing from that story that was tagged to anyone in particular. It was all the people that didn't even, and Brian Kilmeade and others will tell you this, you know, people that didn't even work with him directly. The people that worked with him on a daily basis never saw any of that behavior, but that didn't stop them from bringing it up at the hearing this morning. So this is what you're going to get, and you're going to get it with more of these, you know, confirmation hearings moving forward. But the bottom line is there's a new sheriff in town starting Monday, and these things are going to change. By the way, on that particular topic, have you heard this, Sue, that the this is, I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
The village people are going to be at the inauguration.
Yeah.
And I think they said something like, I saw E! Entertainment cover this story, and there was sort of a line that said, well, we realize that not everyone's going to be happy with this, but how could you not take advantage of the opportunity to do YMCA with Trump doing the Trump dance? The other thing that is fascinating, and I love it, is their, you know, the trash truck. Hang on. I had to hit the post.
Of course.
The trash truck that he was in is also going to make an appearance in the parade.
Is it really?
On Monday. Yeah,
how
awesome is that? I think that that is fantastic. All right, let's see here. Before I get to a break, there are a couple other things that I had on my list here as we got the show started. I did want to talk about the CNN trial just a little bit. You know, this is interesting because the... hey, Fred, see if Ethan has that audio that I just gave to him right before the top of the hour. This is the trial. We covered this, Sue, a little bit last week, but this is the defamation case that's going on. And it's so funny because whenever you see the video of this, because they have cameras in the courtroom, there's nobody. You know, I think people think that in even in murder trials or big trials, that there's tons of people that are in a courtroom. Typically, there's not, you know, unless it's extremely well publicized. So in this particular case, you have, you know, just a handful of people that are in the courtroom. We've got a couple of people that are contributors to this show that are covering this nonstop. But did he say he had that in there?
He's working on
okay,
it right now.
So,
and who's suing in this case?
What's this has to do with a story that was on several years ago during the withdrawal from Afghanistan. And there is a situation where Jake Tapper on his particular show and others, and there were producers that were involved here, that they suggested that this kid named Zachary Young was doing things in Afghanistan just to personally profit over the people that he was trying to help. So they said, they made the allegation that he was involved in black market dealings, and he wasn't. And he was trying to help people. And what you had is you had a situation where some of the behind-the-scenes people, the Fred Bottomers, if you will, the producers, I'm just kind of saying, but they were texting back and forth about this guy. And some of it was rather, you know, hardcore. And that's what happened here is with the discovery, they got a hold of all the messaging back and forth. So the bar is relatively high for a case like this. But let's not forget, and this is why I wanted this audio, because there's a CNN producer by the name of Alex Marquardt who had to testify. Actually, I don't know if he testified today, but they played his deposition, and it's a recorded deposition. And this will remind you, I think, a lot of the Nick Sandman situation, Covington Catholic, because in that situation, do you remember why that got so much attention? Fred,
no.
Think about that morning in what Nick Sandman looked like when he was being surrounded, and then the allegation that he was, you know, mean to the Native American dude. People didn't like the smirk on the white kid's face. Remember? That was mentioned time and time again. This poor kid is in the middle of something he's never seen before, but of course he's got a MAGA hat on. That's bad news. And he's starting to be shouted down. He doesn't even respond. I think it's miraculous. You put someone like me in a situation like that, I'm going to lose my you-know-what. But he stayed there and he was calm, but he was smirking according to the people who were watching him across the country. So this thing took off like wildfire on Twitter. But I remember this. It was a Saturday morning. I woke up to all this stuff on CNN thinking, what the hell happened with this kid? And then it was all, you know, essentially a hoax when you found out the details of it. But I'll play that audio as we move along here in the show, because I think it's very, very revealing. We have some very unique perspective on the fires out west. Paul Ross, who's here in St. Louis, veteran aviation specialist, has fought wildfires before. He's coming up next. Tickets for the Golf Expo coming up a little bit later in the 4 o'clock hour, I do believe. Hey, I just want to close the loop on this CNN defamation case, because this audio is interesting. It reminded me of everything that happened with that Nick Sandman kid. And, you know, CNN had a big check to him, the Covington Catholic situation. So this is a kid named, I think I misidentified him, Michael Conti is his name. He's a producer. Now, this is in a deposition. Okay, so this is not him testifying in court. But listen to the tone that this kid takes in the deposition. He thinks it's all funny what's going on here.
There's a photograph on the screen. Do you understand that to be Zachary Young?
I understand that to be Zachary Young.
Do you think he has a punchable face?
Yeah.
So why do you think that?
Probably the smirk and the sunglasses.
So he had a text where he said, I want to punch this guy. He's got a punchable face. So the attorney says, do you think he's got a punchable face? And the kid says, yeah, it's the smirk and the sunglasses. So that's how they're judging people at CNN.
Did you want to nail Zachary Young?
No, I wanted to tell the story.
Do people at CNN frequently refer to the subjects of stories as mother?
I can't speak for all of CNN.
I'm just asking if it's something you hear a lot at work.
I hear a lot of profanity at work.
Is it usually directed at the subjects of stories?
Sometimes, not always.
Have you ever heard the subject of a story called, referred to as a mother?
I can't recall.
What about shitbag?
I can't recall.
What about a-hole?
I can't recall.
If a reporter is talking about nailing a mother, what would you think they meant?
Oh boy, does that depend on the context.
So those are all words and phrases that were used in the text messages that the lawyers have access to.
Wow.
But I don't know how this is going to turn out. This is a $1 billion defamation case, right? I don't know how it's going to turn out, because I'm not following it every day. Nick Fondacaro is doing great work out there, and I'm following him. And Jessica Kotescu, who we had on last week, is there every day in the courtroom, too. But let's kind of think back to this moment, because if I'm on the jury and I see some little, you know, wet behind the ear producer smirking in front of a camera with an attorney, not taking this seriously, that you just denigrated, you know, an American war hero, if you will. So I think it's disgusting, and oh my God, I hope it could be very close to the end of CNN, because they're going to have to make some really interesting choices moving forward. All right, we got John Ziegler coming up after 5 o'clock from Los Angeles, the co-host of the podcast, The Death of Journalism. I listened to his latest podcast today. He's got some really good insight and thoughts on the fires, in particular on the blame game. But we have a really great expert here in St. Louis. Paul Ross is back with us.
That's
he is
right.
The director of global business at Aviation Battery Systems, but he's a veteran aviation specialist, has fought these fires from the air before. Paul, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, Mark. Great to be back. And, you know, all this snow, but we're talking fires, right?
It's weird. And let's just start with this, because I mentioned in the monologue, until you brought it up and you put it on our plate, Fred and my plate, I had no idea that it was a company here in St. Louis that supplies all this pink retardant that you're seeing, right?
Right. We have endless fire aviation trivia for you. So Perimeter Solutions was the former Monsanto chemical group, and they started developing fire retardant in the 60s. And so on the news, on all these fires, that red fire retardant was developed here in St. Louis by Monsanto and then eventually spun off in 97. And so big history of, you know, tech and solving fire problems here out of the St. Louis area.
That's amazing. Before we talk about L.A., a little of your background, because I know when we've talked before, you fought some of these fires in Arizona, for example, right?
Right. I grew up in St. Louis and then started in wildland forest fire fighting in 1996. And when you do that, you start on a hand crew, you hike to the fires and dig a fire line in the forest around to starve the fire of burning material. And then I moved into helicopter operations. We would fly. We were like a flying fire department working in central Idaho for U.S. Forest Service. We'd fly to remote fires, stay there, put them out, call in the helicopter to drop water, and then eventually moved to the Park Service Fire Rescue Program at Grand Canyon on the helicopter. But concurrently, I also wrote very heavily for a lot of trade magazines in the fire industry and aviation industry, and kind of got to know the industry that way. And I still keep in touch with a lot of friends who are doing this daily in this fire industry out west, and really track it very closely.
Let me just talk about what happened a week ago today. I want to get your level of expertise. It's amazing here in some, you know, reaction to some of the ways that they've, you know, proceeded since then. But on the Palisades fire in particular, in the devastation in Malibu, what was your reaction to that? It all happened so quickly.
Right. So in general, nationally, 98% of all wildfires are caught or suppressed and held to less than 100 acres. But in this case, we all saw the winds that had developed. It looks like that fire started up in a very hilly area. You know, L.A., the neighborhoods are all built into the hills. It looked like it was, they're saying it was potentially in a hiking trail area with heavy brush. And in those conditions with the Santa Ana winds, and I just want to note that the Santa Ana season, you know, it starts in October, but a lot of people say it peaks December, January. So this really isn't unusual. The Santa Anas are very pervasive and can spark up like this. So in those conditions, you have humidity levels with this high desert wind, in the humidity's in the single digits, and dry brush that's been drying for months and months. And so you get an ignition and a fire starts in there, and you've seen the pictures of what happened. And so they count on very actively, though, in Southern California, a aerial suppression response, helicopters dropping water, fire retardant air tankers dropping fire retardant, responding. They couldn't respond. You had all these great ground crews who arguably are some of the best in the world. Southern California wrote the book on the incident command system beginning in the 1970s because of these large, what they call urban interface fires. And so if these guys couldn't handle it, then you know it was a pretty bad situation. The combination of an aerial attack where you're dropping water along with the engines and ground crews meeting that fire head on because of the water dropping, slowing the fire, that's when you can catch these fires. But in this case, it was off to the races in the heavy brush. And then once structures get involved, they become their own fuel type and a massive heat release coming out of those, unfortunately, those burning structures.
So one of the things I said yesterday, because I'm rather addicted to this, you know, as you indicated, I do know the area. I have a lot of friends out there. But I have to give these firefighters and these crews a lot of credit here for the past 4 days. And, you know, today's not so bad right now. It could get worse. But I've been watching these, and you probably have too, where you have these flare-ups, and it certainly looked like it could get bad. There was a house that burned down on Saturday when I was watching it, but these crews got in there with the water drops and the retardant and everything, and they've been able to fight back. Even yesterday or early this morning, there was one that didn't get out of control. Now, we know that we're not out of the woods yet, but then that comes to today, Paul, with the high winds and everything. What are the limitations and the restrictions for helicopters in particular? My understanding is the helicopters are heavier, so they can manage the winds a little bit better than the airplanes, right?
Right. They're able to, depending on the helicopter, they use some very large helicopters. They have commercial versions of the military Blackhawk that you see for L.A. County. You also see the Chinook, commercial version of the twin rotor aircraft. So those aircraft can fly in pretty high winds, but you come to a point where the wind conditions are so bad and you're flying in very, very low level, right? And so you need the ability to get out of a bad situation if you're flying in the aircraft amongst the hills and mountains. So at a certain point, you can't safely do it. Also, the water and fire retardant will just simply blow away and not meet your drop. So, but what you have seen in these past 5 days since the winds calmed relatively, you've seen them get a handle on these various portions of that large Palisades, or the new starts. Did you see the new start by the Hollywood Hollywood Avenue, Hollywood Boulevard area, they were able to jump on that at night, and the helicopters do fly at night dropping water, which is a change over the years. They used to not do that. So these combination of these assets have made a big difference in the what we call initial attack, the initial response, just like our fire departments here at Eureka or somebody on the rolling out to a house fire, the initial attack on these wildfires, it's made a difference now.
Yeah, so I don't know what the next 24 hours will hold, but it's interesting because I know the winds react to the mountains and there's all kinds of things happening out there, but in some circumstances, in some areas, the winds aren't really an issue very much at all. But then I hear some of the reporting out there where they've had gusts up to 60, 70 miles an hour. And I don't know that 99 miles per hour is a whole lot. Maybe it is a whole lot worse than 75. But to me, it wouldn't take much for some of these cinders or embers or whatever still burning. Because now, Paul, they think that maybe this whole thing in Palisades started because of fireworks that went off on New Year's Eve. And maybe some of that was still kind of burning when all this kicked up a week ago, right?
Right. You and I both read that story where, and it reminds you of the Oakland Hills fire in 1991. And in that case, there was a fire that they thought had been put out, and there was not thorough mop-up, what we call mop-up. Mop-up is putting the fire dead out, and that's actually putting your hands down in the dirt mark, in the burned ash, and feeling for heat. Mm-hmm. And that's what we had to do in the middle of nowhere, where you can't afford a rekindle because it's so hard to get back to. And I don't know if that's what they'll find here. There's certainly the possibility that fire rekindled from the New Year's Eve fire. They think it was a fireworks started fire initially in that similar area there in the Palisades.
Veteran fire aviation specialist Paul Ross, who is here in the St. Louis area, is with us. Let me kind of look forward to the future, because it would be my opinion that we're not going to be able to control the winds very much. But aren't there things, technical things, maybe, can you dip your house in a bunch of foam, pink foam, things like that to prevent something on this catastrophic level from happening in the future?
You know, I would tell you that certainly there are those products, and they use those in when they have a little bit more time in some areas where you have more isolated structures. But the bigger thing, Mark, is that folks are living in these areas with brush around the houses. Now, L.A. County has a very strong, strict brush clearance mandate of about 200 feet around new developments and everything, and they really make a difference when there's a fire approaching. That does not allow the eucalyptus tree, which you've seen explode into flames and embers, doesn't allow the eucalyptus tree to then catch the house on fire. So the brush clearance is really probably one of the biggest issues, along with these structures in the Palisades area being built together. The accessibility will never change for firefighters either on trying to get into these areas. You know, if you or I were assigned to protect that house that you saw burn on Saturday, we would have done what's called structure triage, and we would not have defended that house, because if you stand on the ground and look at where that house was, it was a narrow road to get to it. It was one way in, one way out. And unfortunately, as firefighters, in those cases, you have to triage and decide what can I safely defend and not be killed.
And that's what they were doing. There was no doubt that they were just letting that thing burn, but they were trying to be careful to make sure that it didn't go anywhere else.
Right, right. So I think brush clearance mandates, and also the infrastructure side that unfortunately has been neglected. I think it's very clear when you don't have that 117 million gallon reservoir repaired that was in the middle of the Palisades, that would have saved, allowed guys like you or me on a hydrant to save a couple more homes. And isn't that worth it? It is.
It's amazing. That there's going to be a lot of focus on that. Hey, by the way, and I don't know if this has any bearing on the success or not, but one of the things, because I mentioned I'm watching the nonstop coverage on Fox 11 when I was watching this on Friday night and Saturday, they mentioned that, Sue, I don't know if this works, Paul, but some people in some neighborhoods have goats that they have out there specifically to clear the brush.
It's a good idea.
It is, Sue. If you want to get some goats, you can contract and take your herd out to Southern California. We have friends who own a winery, and they hire a herd of goats to clear the brush so their grapes don't burn down. And so that's very common. It's a great tactic. And, just unfortunately, that area is so packed together, and they have not enforced some brush clearance, that this perfect storm of wildfire really was devastating.
Hey, Paul, I really never, maybe I had, didn't really pay much attention to these private firefighting crews that are getting a little discussion. How common, because I think we had a stat yesterday, like 47% of firefighters are with the private crews.
Yes, the private contracted hand crews, and that's like a 20-person crew, that's been very common for many years, because a lot of the wildfire force is seasonal during the fire season. And so sometimes like this, you don't have enough staffing nationally to pull in people. We used to travel on distant mutual aid, but that was during the fire season. If we weren't on duty as seasonal firefighters, then these contract crews have become very common, and they do a great job. It's usually people who have a background having worked for the fire department or U.S. Forest Service, and they go into a more year-round type situation. So it is common out west to have contracted engines. I don't know if you know this, but all the helicopters that you see, except for the fire department logo, those are all contracted and privately owned, because, one, they're so expensive to maintain.
Yeah, makes sense.
That anyway, so there is a lot of contracting in this industry, and it's delivered at a very high level.
Awesome. Paul, great information. You're an awesome resource right here in St. Louis. I appreciate the expertise. We probably have you back before all this is over, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. All great right, to talk care. To you. Talk to you later.
Well, we got a bit of a traffic situation, Sue Thomas.
Yes, we have an overturned vehicle that was smoking, possibly on fire, and this is northbound 270 north of Dorset, and they've got the left lanes blocked. It is really jamming behind it.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that this afternoon. Sue will be back after 4 with Sue's News, so we'll get you updated on some of the fun stuff this afternoon. Also, Charles Lipson, our friend from the University of Chicago, Professor Emeritus, will join us to talk about some things related to confirmation hearings, etc. My friend John Ziegler from the Death of Journalism podcast out in L.A. has some great insight. He's been, out in Los Angeles most of his life, and he'll relate not only to some of the things that are happening out there, but the policies and the DEI nonsense. I heard his podcast today, a lot of discussion about that. I love the fact that there are people on the left, and I didn't mention this last week. We didn't even bring it up on the roundtable. Wesley Bell voted against, like a bunch of other Democrats in the House, against the Laken Riley Act.
Why?
Well, because you have to be someone who cares more about people who are not in this country legally than tax-paying American citizens. Well, if I'm in his district and I'm a poor African-American person and he's not voting for this, I say, hey, wait a second. Why? Why in the world would you not care about me because I'm an American citizen?
Yep.
So Michelle Goldberg, one of the nut jobs over at the New York Times, and we lost one nut job this week. Jen Rubin from the Washington Post decided to call it quits. Oh, she'll be sorely missed. These are all the kind of people that, and I lump them with like professors from WashU, no offense if you're a sane professor at WashU, but these are the kind of people that you would never in any circumstance want to hang out with. Like, there's some people out there that I disagree with. I can use Barack Obama. I bet I could watch a football game, or a baseball game, or talk music with Barack Obama, right? I couldn't do that with Jen Rubin or Michelle Goldberg or some of these other nut jobs out there. So she writes this column, it's in the New York Times today, about the Laken Riley Act. Democrats will regret helping to pass the Laken Riley Act. And at one point she goes, this is understanding that some Democrats would support this. But if all the bill did was mandate the deportation of migrants convicted of petty theft, it would make sense for many Democrats to back it, if only because there's so little political upside in defending the rights of undocumented shoplifters. But she says the bill, this is where it gets interesting, the bill goes much further than that. So it mandates federal detention without bail for migrants who are merely arrested for any theft related crimes. Well, gosh, I like that idea. That sounds pretty good to me. Let's say they're not here legally in this country. They've also broken another law. Let's see if we can decide if we need to deport them, because I think that might be something we would want to do. The bill applies to many immigrants who are authorized to be here, including Dreamers and those with temporary projected or protected status. The legislation contains no exemption for minors. So she points out that Ilya Salmon, a law professor at George Mason University, the Laken American Riley Act could mandate the indefinite detention of a juvenile child of asylum seekers arrested for swiping a candy bar, even if he or she didn't do it. Well, that might be an unfortunate situation, but let's think about what the parents did to come to this country and put their kids in jeopardy anyway. They did it because they wanted to give themselves and their kids a better life, but there are consequences for crossing the border illegally, and there should be consequences. One of the acts, she says, one of the act's other provisions would give state officials unheard of power over immigration policy. If the bill passes, a state attorney general could sue to block all visas to people from recalcitrant countries that don't fully cooperate with the United States in accepting deportees. Good! That would be awesome if Andrew Bailey would sue to block all the visas from countries that don't cooperate with the United States. So I think this is a good bill. It passed the House overwhelmingly last week. It's going to pass the Senate. You got John Fetterman and others that are co-sponsors. Even Ruben Gallego of Arizona, who's a Democrat, co-sponsored this. Fetterman, you know, he said last week, you know, look, if you can't vote for the Lake and Riley Act, hey, attention, Wesley Bell, this is why we lost the election, right? He gets it. I don't know why Wesley Bell doesn't.
Get more at 971talk.com.